Welcome to the Group Home Riches Podcast. If you have the desire to be your own boss, create your own schedule, and become financially free while at the same time helping people in need, then you've come to the right place. At GroupHomeRiches.com, we teach people exactly like yourself how to get started in the group home business. And on this podcast, you're going to hear their stories firsthand. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Group Home Riches Podcast. Today's guest is a real estate investor with a ton of experience in that field who's just recently kind of made the shift into our business model. A couple weeks ago, he kind of reached out to us with a pretty simple question. We got his background. When we heard about his experience, we were like, hey, we got to get you on the podcast. So here we are. Chad, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Brandon. Thanks for having me.
So before we kind of get into the real estate stuff and kind of hearing about the group homes that you have running now, I'm just curious, you know, you have the background in real estate. What made you find us? Like, what brought you to even land on the Group Home Riches website?
Well, that's kind of a longer story than to just say, you know, I just ended up at the Group Home site, right? So yeah. My career in real estate started when I was 16 years old, and it's been a while. I'll just say that. Mm-hmm. And so a friend of mine, his father got hurt on the railroad, got a bunch of money, and he started buying houses, you know, that he retired from that and got a bunch of money from the railroad. He retired, started buying houses, and I just started showing up to work for him for free. And it's just something that really interested me. And I gained a ton of experience doing that over the course of a couple of years, secretly hoping that he would like invite me in as a partner or something in one of these deals. He never did that, but I got something worth so much more. And that was experience. And then when I was 19 to 20, I bought my first house, and he came and repaid that to me. And so he gave me his labor and his time, and that turned into my first investment. And then over the course of time, I wouldn't even really consider myself a real estate investor at that time, but that's when the seed was planted. And so just over 20 years now, I've been a real estate investor, and mostly in single family rentals, then started buying, you know, small multifamily, and am also into larger multifamily as well. But over the course of the years, one thing that I really struggle with is that turnover from the tenants. And in my area, we experience real long-term tenants, and that's great. But recently, I'd say somewhere in the last 5 or 6 years, things started to change. The tenant turnover was a little bit quicker. So we were, you know, probably 3 years on average. But when they would leave, they left our properties a disaster. So now every time I'm turning over, it's costing me $5,000 or $6,000. Right. And so that just chews up my capital. All that time that I was an investor, I also had a professional career as a business analyst. So, you know, The money side of this was just purely an investment for me. It was an interest of mine. I loved to do it, but it was an investment. So I didn't have to live off that income in the first 15 years that I was as an investor. But, you know, the past 5 years, I have been live off of this income now because I am full time, and it stings a little bit more. You know, when a family goes in and destroys a property and I've got to drop $5,000 on it to get somebody else in there, and then they're only going to be in there for 2 or 3 years and do the same thing. Now, I typically, when people buy properties, they play by the 1% rule, right? Where rent has to be 1% of the purchase price or 1% of the price of the total investment. So if you have a $100,000 house, you want to get $1,000 a month out, right? Because I wasn't a full-time investor, I was really playing by 2%. Right. So that gave me some really good cash flowing assets. And I have a lot of really good cash flowing houses. With that said, though, this tenant turnover increase and the extra expense that I've gone through with it really has had me scratching my head. So in 2022, I was just taking a beating. It was a bloodbath. You know, it was like I was bleeding capital everywhere, and I was just, you know, late in the year, I was just thinking, I was telling my wife, I'm like, I've just got to find something different. Got to find a different way, because we were going into you know, what we thought was turbulent times. And I didn't know that I was going to be acquiring real estate in 2023 because the prices, we didn't know the economy was going to look. I'm pretty low risk, low to moderate risk. So I don't take a lot of real big risks. So I'm like, I want to see how this is going. I'm not going to be buying new real estate. So what can I do with what I have? Right. And I'm a Bigger Pockets fan. There was an episode on Bigger Pockets, like, I don't know what month it was, November, December. A lady had come on and talked about she had a group home and she was getting, I don't know what her numbers were, 8 to 10x, you know, what she was getting prior, but she was in a licensed facility. So as I began to research that, as this may be the potential answer to my questions of how can I use my properties in a different and more profitable way, that's what led me to your group, Group Home Riches, and taking the unlicensed approach. And I could scale that a lot faster and lower risk. And so that's what led me down that road. And so far, so good. I had a really good experience with that. We'll get into that today.
Yeah. Beautiful. Ton of info and a lot to unpack there. But basically, the catalyst was just kind of the change in quicker turnover. And then for some reason, whatever it, you know, no rhyme or reason to it, but the tenants just in the last couple of years have been tearing the properties up a little bit more than normal. So
yeah,
you started looking into, you were thinking about like ways you probably were, did you ever like, you were probably contemplating Airbnb and things like that. And then you heard the Bigger Pockets about the assisted living. And that was the catalyst. Like, all right, I need to start looking into this.
Yeah, actually, I had a couple Airbnbs. I've since converted one of those into a group home. And I was doing pretty well there. I was doing, I don't average probably, you know, $3,500 on a good month. But Airbnbs in our area, it's a little different because you're going to have 7 really good months and then 5 months that aren't so good. So when I looked at that, what's my average, right? Because if I look at my best months, I'm probably going to hit. I'm in Indianapolis, right? So there's May is a huge month. So we would triple in May what we would do any other month just because the prices go through the roof with the race season, the Indianapolis 500 and other races in the area. But you have to look at that over the course of the year, right? What's your average income? What's your total income for that? So I ended up choosing to convert a successful Airbnb to a group home because I was looking for that gross annual. Yeah. And as well, the management's a little bit different. I don't really care for the management that you have to do on an Airbnb. It's really more active. So I did choose to convert that. And it was one that was my easiest conversion because it's already furnished. I just had to make some changes, right? Just had to get the queen beds out, put twins in and, you know, that type of stuff, right? Just to kind of make it more in line with this model.
Yeah. And even, you know, the catalyst for both of them, I'm sure this is nuanced, but if we had to pick one, it was cash flow, right? I mean, a lot of like our Gold Course members, they don't really come from a real estate background. This is kind of their first foray into real estate, which at the end of the day, that's what this is, right? It's just a real estate niche. But when we tell them that like the amount of money that your average landlord is making, the average profit, a lot of them are shocked. So you brought up like the 1% rule, which is very common. Luckily, you're conservative and you went for the 2% rule. So that's awesome. So you were actually getting decent cash flow. But you know, the average investor, they're looking to make usually $200 or $300 per month if you're getting like a, you know, traditional mortgage, right?
Yeah, that's right. $200, $250 a month is usually pretty standard.
Yeah.
And that doesn't go far when you're having to replace roofs and water heaters.
Exactly. So I want to kind of elaborate that for our members out there that are thinking like, how could a landlord lose money? Like that doesn't make sense. A lot of people have this misconception that every landlord is just balling out of control and they're pocketing $2,000 every single month on their properties when it's totally not like that. If everything goes well, and again, this is just your average, right? Some are better, some are worse, but your average deal is going to net $200 or $300 per month. But then what happens when somebody moves out and you have to put in $6,000 into that rehab. There goes all your profit for that whole year, right? So that is, you know, for the folks listening out there that are kind of new, haven't really looked into real estate, this is like, you know, those are the problems that a lot of landlords that you guys are approaching are facing, and the group home business model can kind of solve that, which is why Chad is with us here today, right? So, yeah. So when did you find us, by the way? It was just a couple months ago, right?
Yeah. I think I started force feeding your content, if you will, in December, I think it was, right? So just kind of over the winter, just taking in as much as I could. And then it was probably late January when, yes. So it wasn't long, right?
So it's only been a couple months.
Oh yeah. When I find something good, I just gorge myself on it and take action. Right. So that's what I did in this. And by late January, I was, you know, starting my first conversion. By within 1 or 2 weeks later, I'm working on my second one, you know. And this time might be a little bit off, but within an 8-week period, I opened 3 houses and they were full.
Okay. There's a lesson in there. And also that's massive. I think that might be a record. I think that might be a Group Home Rich's record for the most properties in the least amount of time. So
I did have a little an advantage there in that one of them, you know, didn't need a lot of work, that Airbnb, right? Another one we had just finished the conversion on, I was halfway into making that an Airbnb. So for me, it was just a change of direction, you know? But yeah, it was a lot of work. I mean, you know, I was working 60 to 70 hours a week during that 8-week period. And I was just, I've got a crew that works for me and they were keeping up with me as fast as they could, just keeping going. You know, they were working on the next one while I was furnishing and getting them ready. And at the same time, trying to raise a business, right? Yeah. Trying to call programs, cold calling, and getting the word out and starting a website and everything that goes along with that.
Beautiful. Let's kind of dive into that because that's like the next steps for most of the listeners out there. This is the type of stuff that they're going to need to do. So you saw the Bigger Pockets interview kind of sparked your interest. Did you start to look into going down the licensed route? And why don't you kind of, well, let's go there. Did you start to look into how to start an assisted living facility?
Basically, yeah. And it didn't take long before I changed gears there. I think that it was, I didn't get very far down that road at all before I found your podcast first. I was doing some research and then I went to looking for podcasts because that's how I learn a lot. And found Group Home Riches. And then immediately, because it's, you know, the tone of your podcast. And one thing that you talk about repeatedly is there's no need for licensing, right? No need to rezone. And so that those legal parts of it was something that I really wanted to focus on because I didn't want to get that wrong.
Yeah.
But once I headed down that direction, I didn't turn back. But cool. I did a lot of research on that.
It's one of those things that honestly, it holds a lot of people back and a lot of people, it just doesn't click for them in the beginning. So did you have any kind of challenges there or did you understand it pretty quickly once you kind of started looking into it?
I understood it enough for me to take action and begin investing in the model, but I was still doubting, right? Mm-hmm. So my biggest obstacle was myself. I trusted in it. I looked at the resources, you know, the Fair Housing Act, local law, how many people can you get in? And it was just really doubting it more than anything. But I knew that I went forward anyway because I trusted the process. I just needed to catch up to it. So that was myself. I was the biggest obstacle. I didn't really let it slow me down.
Because yeah. Just off the top, it sounds like something that you need to get like a license for or some type of certificate, right? It's just like the immediate first thought.
Yeah.
So how many homes do you have now?
I have 3 cooperative living houses open currently. My guys right now are working on our 4th one. We just got another one of our long-term rentals back this past weekend. So I just went and did an inspection on it. It's four bedrooms. We're going to framing in a dining room. So it's going to be five bedrooms in that house. But we have currently two men's houses and one women's house. And then this next one, it looks like it's going to be a women's house. And that's just based on demand.
Okay. And are they, is it just open cooperative living, or are you zeroing in on any specific demographics for those homes?
Yeah, it's just general public, really. I have not been able to nail down a niche to the point where I can go after it, right? Mm-hmm. I've talked to a lot of veteran associations and whatnot. And so far, I'm, you know, like for them, I'm getting, they've got HUD-VASH certificates, so they can't live in cooperative living. They have to have their own unit. And so I've actually been able to house them at a different location across town where we have studios, but I haven't really been able to nail down a niche. And so far this is working for me. So some of our folks work, others don't at all. They're, you know, disabled. We have a mixed bag, the type of guests that we have in our properties. And there's a lot of people around our area that live in motels. And so we've picked up a few of those as well. And they may have employment. I think all of those have employment because they're paying $1,600 to $2,200 a month in a hotel. So, but then the others that don't, they're coming out of, you know, other programs. I've made a couple of partnerships with local programs and local homeless shelters. So we work closely together. And so, yeah, it's just pretty much general population.
And that's where, we don't have the exact numbers on this, but probably about 80% of our Andy's tenants are kind of fall into that niche as well. You did mention, though, you have a couple folks that are on disability. So do you have any tenants that do, like, that are getting like medical services or counseling or anything like that that does require licensing or certification?
They would require a license, and maybe I want to make sure I'm understanding your question. So ask it again if I don't answer it the way.
You have any of your tenants that are receiving any service that does require a license or a certification?
Yes, we do, but we are not offering the service, so we don't have to be licensed, right? Oh, yeah. So we have nurses and other, you know, medical professions that are coming in and out of our houses.
So
on a pretty regular basis.
I'm just trying to illustrate for the folks out there the idea of outsourcing, and that's typically how it works. So I'm guessing you did a lot of networking with like local organizations and nonprofits that are working with folks like this that need this type of housing.
Yeah.
And were all of those services set up already, or did you need to kind of help the tenants out?
Most of them were already set up. There was a couple of instances where I had to help them get that set up for various reasons. And, you know, I've not been doing this long, a tremendous amount of experience in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And so if one of my residents ends up in the hospital, guess who's going to visit the hospital? You know, I'm going to be there beside that person and meeting their social worker or case manager in the hospital, you know, meeting the chaplain, meeting anybody that has people coming in that has needs. And then also, you know, kind of being an advocate for them to get services that they need.
Yeah, it's kind of, even though it's not technically or legally like your obligation, you almost become kind of like a caseworker, right? A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just want to kind of illustrate, you know, we always talk about that in our content, the idea of outsourcing, but that you guys just got a real life glimpse into how that typically works, like in practice. A lot of times it's already set up. Sometimes you may need to be like a little bit hands-on, make some phone calls with your connections and get people set up. But in a nutshell, that's why Chad does not need to get any type of license or anything like that. All he's doing is providing the housing. A lot of his tenants are getting, you know, services like medical services, maybe counseling, what have you, case management. All of that stuff does require, you know, some type of license or some type of certification. But Chad, and nor his quote unquote employees, his business, they don't need any type of license. They're simply just outsourcing it to those in the community that do have those licenses. So that was probably the first topic that you started to kind of research and dive in before you made the jump to convert the properties. once you kind of worked your way through that, I'm guessing you started to network with the local organizations, correct?
Yeah. And I started out as a Gold Course teaches with going through the Yellow Pages and building an email list and started blasting out emails to people that had no idea who I was. And I didn't even have a house open yet. Right. So my goal has been in all three houses and the one that I'm getting ready to open is I want it full before I even open the doors, basically. Right. Or at least want enough people in there that's going to pay the bills. And that's not hard at all. So I started down that road. But my best networking is just showing up in person, right? Getting connected to the county organizations, substance abuse councils, and getting invitations to luncheons. I was able, to secure those invitations pretty easily. Just finding out where do people meet? How do you talk to one another, right? I mean, you've got all of these county resources that effort that's going into this problem that we have, but how do you all talk to one another? Those are the types of questions that I was asking. Then I got invitations to networking events and luncheons and conferences, and I just started showing up, right? Just go prepared, have a business card, have a pitch, have a flyer, and you're in business, right? You'd be the most popular person in the room.
Okay. That was one of my questions. So you pretty much answered it. What was the reception like? You know, were they iffy about it? Did they ask you a ton of questions? Or, you know, what was the response like when they found out a new investor was in town and wanting to work with them?
Yeah. I mean, it was just an incredible response, right? Just nothing but positive. How much it's needed. How many more we need like it. You know, do you have any for these types of people? Or do you have any in this location? And just lots of questions, right? Just qualifying questions, but really more just open arms, more than anything.
Bingo. I'm curious, what's your elevator pitch?
You know, it's really very simple. It's just a simple explanation of what we provide in that, you know, we're providing cooperative living to people in need, people that can't meet the needs and requirements of traditional leases, right? And I say that more than anything, because that covers most of our client base, right? It's not, I don't want to pigeonhole myself into saying I'm trying to find homeless people or I'm trying to find veterans or disabled. Like, I'm here to house the people that can't find housing. I'm here to house the people that can't get approved for housing. And I know from years and years of experience what those requirements are, right? So I can call those out. You know, so there's the income requirements, there's felony and criminal requirements, there's eviction, you know, past evictions. So I'm just hitting those talking points, really. And it resonates because, I mean, that's a lot. We live in a market where, so for many years, we experienced pretty low, you know, housing, our values that were maintained pretty well. We would only see a 7% growth year over year. But it wasn't until post-COVID that in some areas, the cost of our housing tripled, but in most areas, it at least doubled, right? So the market completely shifted. The incomes did not change. And property managers, because the rental market became, it changed so much, their requirements began to change as well, right? So that forced a lot of people out of traditional housing, especially low income earners and anybody that had a checkered background, whether they have an eviction or certain types of felonies. So they were no longer approved for any housing. So yeah, knowing that just became part of my pitch.
You pretty much illustrated like the massive problem that this country is facing. And, you know, with big problems also come big opportunities when you solve those problems. Another part of the equation, you know, how many other real estate investors were going to these meetings and doing, you know, similar stuff to you?
Meetings with county and stuff? Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I was the only one there.
How often do you see other investors in bigger pockets talk about this stuff?
Never.
Exactly.
outside of that one podcast episode that I referred to. But yeah, this is not on the radar.
Exactly.
This is not on the radar. Not yet. I think that's still very, very early, and there's so much room. Maybe 4 or 5 years down the road, this may become a bigger topic, and we'll go mainstream, if you will, right, with investors. In the meantime, it's cherry picking, really.
It's yours for the taking out there, guys.
Yeah.
So, and also, you know, Chad, you did have access to the properties, but it's not like, you know, you didn't like fix the properties up, get everything furnished, and have a vacant, empty house before you went out and did the networking and stuff like that, right?
No, I started, that was the first thing it probably was in parallel, right? Okay. But yeah, I mean, I started creating the business, creating the ideas, the concepts, and started marketing in parallel with getting the houses going, so.
Yeah, you touched on that, an important concept, I think. Andy feels the same way. So you said that you kind of wanted to have the tenants lined up before the property was ready or before you converted another property, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's my goal. And it's worked out every time since. But, and if it doesn't, that's fine too, because I know the tenants will be, they'll be coming shortly after I open or, you know, shortly after I'm done.
So folks listening out there, again, maybe you're just getting started. You might not be a real estate investor. You might not have the funds sitting around to purchase a property right now, but you can totally do those first steps that Chad did without having a property. You could do the marketing. You could figure the stuff out and you just tweak that little elevator pitch a little bit. I don't have the properties yet, but I'm aggressively looking for my first property and plan on being open in the next 30 to 60 days. What are your needs?
Yeah.
Right. And you know, do you think the reception would have changed that much if you didn't have a bunch of properties?
Oh, no, not at all. I think that they're ready and willing to accept anyone that wants to house people. Right. Yeah. And they didn't really qualify me much. And, you know, I think you got to sell yourself, right? You have to call and sound intelligent and sound compassionate. Otherwise, it could go differently, but I don't even really know that. But, you know, but you're selling yourself as much as you are anything else.
Yeah.
So these believe people, in what you're doing. Yeah.
They need people like you guys, like Chad. They need access to properties. The government has recognized this problem that we kind of have described, and they're throwing, you know, massive amounts of funding towards this, just affordable housing in general. And as we've kind of illustrated, there's not a lot of investors that are taking advantage of this yet. So you touched on a really cool topic in the beginning, like kind of how you got into the real estate space, which was essentially like looking to become a partner. Like you got basically started in real estate when you were only 16, you said?
Well, that's when I started showing up and working for free.
Well, yeah. That's it, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So let's talk about that. You identified he was a real estate investor, correct?
Yes.
And you wanted to learn the business. You wanted to get started in real estate, right? So
yeah,
this is a really good topic and a very similar situation that a lot of listeners out there are facing too, right? They don't have all the knowledge. They may not have the resources to get out there and get a bunch of properties yet. So why don't we dive into that a little bit? Why don't you talk about your strategy on, you know, how you found a partner and how you think others out there should go about like partnering with people?
Well, I can speak to this. I don't have very many partners, right? But the ones that I do, I have pretty specific requirements for them, right? And outside of just being trustworthy and that, I have a request. I don't know. During the summer, I probably get 10 to 12 requests a month from people online, from people I know. So during the warmer months of, hey, I want to pick your brain for a minute. And that always turns into, you know, I want to get into the real estate game. Do you take on partners? Can we partner on a property? And during the winter months, it dies down to just a few a month, but it's pretty consistent for me. And, you know, first question I always ask laughing is, did you bring a deal with you? Or do you, you know, do you have something in mind? And the answer is always no. I'm like, okay, well, it takes one of three things to partner with me. You either have to have capital, you have to have a ton of experience, or you have to have a lot of time that you can invest, right? And for me, kind of looking back to when I was a teenager, I didn't know what I was doing, right? But I gave him my time. You know, I was secretly hoping, I wasn't asking him, will you partner with me? And if you go back and listen to that again, I said I was secretly hoping, because I knew, you know, in my teenage mind that there was no way that this guy was going to partner with me, but I sure was hoping that he would, you know, bring me in on a deal. There's so much money to be made, and I wanted a piece of that. And I really just liked the idea of real estate and what he was doing. But, you know, in retrospect, I gave him my time and I gave it freely, and I just kept showing up. And that's what people are looking for. You know, if you're looking to, there's a lot of different ways you can get into real estate. There's a lot of different niches that you can go, you know, whether it be wholesaling or single family rentals or flipping, you know, a bunch of different models. But without having cash reserves, you're going to have a really hard time starting. So that's why people seek out partnerships. And when you do seek out partnerships, you have to bring value to that, because they don't have time to teach somebody and get nothing from it, right? I enjoy, and I'm pretty active in the group, and I enjoy sharing my knowledge with people, but that's in my free time, you know, when I'm sitting around on the couch or whatever. But during the workday, I'm nose to the grindstone. I'm a hard worker. I'm busy. I'm on the phone all the time. And that's how real estate investors are. And so, and I'll, you know, put this as plainly as I can. They don't want freeloaders, right? They don't want somebody just leech onto them and suck them dry of their time and their effort. You have to bring value. And that comes in those, one of those three ways. You know, for me, it's capital, because I'm always looking for more capital. It's expensive to go buy it. So if there's another way for me to get it, I will do that. You're an investment of time, because my time is my most valuable thing and I have a finite amount of it. So if I can use your time, I will. Or you have to have a lot more experience than I do so I can learn something from you. So that's kind of what I look for when I'm approached with that question.
So folks out there that are looking to start a group home business, and maybe you're living check to check, you have the motivation to do this, but you know, maybe you don't have the resources to go and purchase a property right now, or even lease a property. That's why I bring the check to check. You know, we've had people start this business with absolutely zero, and that's via partnerships. So these are key lessons for people to learn out there. And even if that doesn't describe you, even if you are, maybe you are an investor out there, you're still going to need to learn these concepts if you want to go get capital, right? So there's a couple like different examples of ways you can do this. And I think, Chad, your like first foray into real estate, even though you weren't necessarily like an investor, right? Was literally just giving your time to that investor and like bringing value to him. And
yeah, and that, paid me back multiple times.
Yeah, you weren't an expert, right? You didn't have the capital, but you were just a 16-year-old hungry kid. You at least had the time, right? So what were some of the things that you did for that first investor to kind of get your feet wet and get your foot in the door?
Whatever he needed me to do.
I love that.
If it was to go get lunch, I would go get lunch. If it was to go in the crawl space, I would go in the crawl space. You know, whatever. I'll use whatever tool, do whatever I had to do, because that's where I was in my life, right? Yeah. So I was just willing to execute whatever task he didn't want to, right? His time was worth a lot more than mine.
I love that. And was it just an internship, or was he like paying you hourly, or what was that like?
No, I wouldn't get paid at all. And he never paid me a dime. I would just show up. He was a friend of mine's dad, right? So I knew him, and I knew him going in. So there's no intern, nothing like that, right? It's like I was spending a lot of time at my friend's house, and I recognized that he was that his dad was beginning to do this and was talking a lot about it. I was just asking questions and just showed up, right? And just kept showing up.
So that was just something that just intrinsically that you knew, I guess. But think of how many people don't. So a lot of people out there, you probably need to have a mindset shift when it comes to this topic. Chad, you say, let's just say on average, what do you think you get, like 75 to 100, you know, quote unquote partnership requests, or like people that want to pick your brain or what have you, about 75 to 100 per year?
Yeah, probably. Maybe more conservatively, 50 to 75 a year. Yeah.
And about 99% of them approach you the wrong way. They don't bring any type of value. They're simply looking to extract from you.
Yeah, right. I might, you know, some of them occasionally will offer me a beer. And, jeez, you know, I don't drink, but thank you. Or a coffee. And, you know, it's, don't offer me something I can get it myself. You know?
Yeah, I was even lumping those people into the 99%, but the majority of people don't even come offering a drink. That's wild.
No.
So, you know, Chad's experience was a great example of that. And then, yeah, he didn't make, you know, whatever, $10 per hour or what have you. But that experience, I think, paid for itself, right? Did you get a good ROI on that first internship?
I'm still getting it today.
Love it.
Yeah. And that's the beautiful thing about real estate, really. And underneath all of this group home business is real estate investment. Right. If you have to start by leasing properties, that's one way to start. And I think that's an incredible way to start because it's hard to acquire properties sometimes, especially in different types of markets. So start however you can. But ultimately, I think the goal would be to buy your own properties because there are so many advantages to being a real estate investor that you're missing out by leasing properties that you'll ultimately become. You'll transition from being a group home and group home operator to a real estate investor. And that's when wealth starts to come.
Bingo. That's why I love having folks like yourself on, because the people that do kind of go down that path, maybe they start leasing or partnering with another investor. A lot of them don't even realize this, but eventually they become investors. They have done the networking. They've seen it work. They're starting to get some cash flow coming in. Then they realize, like, man, I need to get more properties. How do I find the real estate? Boom. Welcome to real estate investing, which is, it's a whole other, you know, it's a whole other business. It's a whole different art form. There's so many different strategies. So that process that you described, Chad, of like just, what'd you say, drinking from the fire hose, right? It's never ending. I bet you have something like that you're doing all the time. Whether it be group homes or multifamilies, different strategies, I bet you the education never stops.
It never stops. And I listen to a lot of podcasts and been doing this for a long time. And most of what's said in podcasts, I'm not learning from. But what I'm looking for are those little nuggets, right? Of how other operators are operating their real estate portfolio differently. So where I can make a tweak and improve what I'm doing. So you're always learning, even after years and years of experience. I never stop learning. So that's a big part of this.
Yep. Same. And there's, you know, many ways to get started. If you guys are going down the partnership path, you know, use Chad's example when he was a teenager. Me, myself, when I started getting into real estate, first, I just went and got a job with a property management company. So I gave them my time, right? I kind of learned that stuff. I've always had like sales and marketing skills. So I wanted to learn how to wholesale after, you know, drinking from the fire hose, right? Going through Bigger Pockets, all the podcasts. I was like, all right, wholesaling's my thing. I went and found a local wholesaler. It was like, look, this is my background. This is what I bring to the table. If I bring a deal to you, will you help me out? And it's probably like one out of the 100 requests that he got. So when you do get approached with that correct kind of process, do those people like that stick out and it kind of makes you want to work with them more when you are approached correctly?
Absolutely. Those are the partners that I have today.
And it's only, what'd you say? Like just a handful of them,
just
right?
Just a handful. Yeah.
So yeah, guys, be in that 1% and you're going to stick out, and it'll, you know, think about this. Chad likes helping people. He does it in his free time. So when people do stick out, when they are going to bring actual value to them, it's probably like night and day, and you probably like pumped to work with them rather than like, oh man, I got to go meet this guy for coffee and he's going to bore me with, you know, newbie questions that he could find on Google. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So an example, we gave you the formula, right? Bring value, look to bring value, look to help your partner rather than extract. An example specifically with the group home business that you guys could take is do the networking first, do the marketing, find the organizations that are looking for investors. Also, you know, do the educational work. The first question an investor is going to have is about the licensing and legality stuff. You guys can just dig into the gold course and become an expert on that and explain it to them. So I'll put you on the spot a little bit, Chad. If you were to be a pro, like, let's go back to like, you know, a couple months ago when you were kind of first starting this out on your own. If someone like a Gold Course member would have approached you and said, hey, look, I have this relationship with this nonprofit. You know, they have like hundreds of people on their waiting list. I have the systems in place, yada, yada. I'm just need a couple homes to operate out of. If they had done that work, would you have, you know, explored partnering with somebody like that?
It's a good question. And the answer has to be yes, right? Because I'm a passive investor up until now, and I'm going to transition to be more passive once I get systems in place for this, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to create myself a job, right? So I was a passive investor. I acquired property and I would just kind of fold them into the portfolio. And when I started having issues with capital and the turnover, I'm looking for how do I solve that problem? And if somebody approaches me with a solution to that problem and can increase my cash flow, reduce my turnover, reduce my labor and material costs for each turnover, I'd be silly to say no, right? And on top of that, you're in the house how often? You know, meaning that a good operator is in the house once or twice a week at least, right? So your eyes are on your property. There's no kids in there. There's no pets in there. Any maintenance issue is going to be noticed within a few days of it starting to happen. So that's a no-brainer for me
as an investor. What if someone were to approach you like that now, offer to take over the management of things and kind of be the operational manager for you? Would you consider like a partnership with somebody like that?
Yeah. So that's my biggest problem right now, right? It's like, so now I'm looking for how do I get myself out of this? Because I created myself a job, which is fine, right? That's just not my goal. So now I'm trying to withdraw myself and create some separation between me and my residents. So yeah, I would consider that. I'm actually have created some partnerships around my local area to do that, but it only solves some of the problems. It doesn't solve them all. And I'll explain. So we have a large homeless shelter, family services center that's in my county. And that was one of the first places that I went to talk to. And they have immediately embraced the idea, loved what I was doing because I'm serving people in their county. They saw my compassion. They saw, you know, I'm a resident here. I care. Right. And I can scale. So they offered me a partnership, not like a financial partnership, but they are wanting to bring their services into my houses. Right. Mm-hmm. So they've got social workers that work for them and they want to make my rounds on a weekly basis. Right. Because I started telling them, here's my problems. Right. Here's where I'm going. This is a problem that I'm going to have and I need to solve. Right. And they're like, well, we can help you solve that. We can put our people in your houses on a weekly basis to go in and restock, to do an assessment of all of your residents and connect them to services and pick up the mail at the post office for everybody. And, you know, just check all my boxes for the week, essentially, and deal with any conflict that's going on in the house through like a telehealth so they don't have to drive there. They can do Zoom calls. They've got their systems in place. And so I created that partnership. They haven't started executing those yet, but we are working towards it, right? So we're ironing out the process. They've got to make sure they've got the staff because they have to have women's houses, men for men's houses. So that's a kind of long way around the barn. Yes, I absolutely am looking for those types of ways, partnerships to take the load off of me, because I don't want to be, I want to go in and visit, you know, but I don't want to go in and visit on a weekly basis. And I don't want to solve the problem that these two tenants have because they think they're going in, she's going in my room or she's going in my room, or, you know, I'm not here for that. So I'm looking for those types of solutions.
Yeah. So right now, the listeners, you know, there's social workers, there's caseworkers, there's nurses, there's people that enjoy, you know, being hands-on, that are interested in kind of getting out of those fields to be group home operators. So that's like the perfect example of a partnership right there. But if you've done the work, if you know the Gold Course stuff, like the back of your hand, if you know how to you know, network and speak with these organizations and things like that, as well as be confident, be charismatic, likable person. That's kind of like the profile of a partner with Chad. Chad needs an operational manager. If not now, he's going to need one soon. So he can
very soon.
Yeah. Just so he can get out of the day-to-day activities and start focusing on the real estate. And then you guys scale. It's obviously simplified and it sounds easier when you just say it, but that's the process, you know, and it's the win-win.
I sat down with one of our, out of Indianapolis, one of our bigger property management offices. They manage some of our bigger multifamily stuff, and was explaining to them what I do. And he's an investor as well. So I knew that he would latch onto the idea. And so, you know, I'm bringing value, right? Because he's got a big portfolio of houses that he can choose from. I want the ones with 4, 5, 6 bedrooms. And he's got the operational side. And I'm bringing the idea. I'm bringing the model. Here's how we'll set it up. We've already established. And so we can just marry those two things and we can scale really fast. So just looking for those opportunities of who has what you need and how can you bring value to them?
I love that. So that's just a higher level example of what we're explaining, right? So even Chad at his level, 20 years real estate experience, he's still doing what we just explained. He's going out. So he's taking this model and, you know, these values, and he's approaching the folks that own all the apartment complexes in the area with that same value. It's not, hey, let me meet for coffee and pick your brain and, you know, tell me how you acquired all these apartment complexes. It's, hey, I got this opportunity. I have a track record. I can make you X amount of money. Boom. That's how it's done. I love that. So on all levels, you want to kind of follow that formula of looking to bring value, looking to solve problems, and not extracting from someone that you want to partner with.
Yep.
Love it. So you've mentioned you've kind of worked your way up from just, you know, unpaid intern, got your first property at a very young age. Now you're taking down some multifamily properties. Have you looked into kind of molding, you know, taking those relationships that you've probably built with the larger organizations, and a lot of them have voucher programs and things like that. Have you looked into kind of molding these two, like, you know, affordable housing with the multifamily properties?
I've got my eye on it. So one of my partners that I own some larger multifamily with, he's watching me very close, you know, and he's very inquisitive about it. And it's a C-class multifamily property, which would be perfect for this. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I'm too busy at this time to tackle it, but we're constantly looking at how can we do this in multifamily, right? It doesn't work in a one-bedroom apartment.
Correct.
Right? And that's the biggest part of the issue. And even then, some of the properties that I have I've got a quad that I was just in over the weekend. We just turned over a unit and I was thinking, man, I could not figure out how can I make this work. I even put this on the Facebook group a few days ago. Anybody have any ideas here? Right? Here's a unit. It's one bedroom. Who can I serve kind of with the same type of a model to make this fine, to make this more profitable than just a normal rental unit, you know? Because there's the undertaking of the capital outlay of furnishing it and setting it up. And then you're taking on all the monthly utilities and Wi-Fi and all the additional expenses. So, and you can only get one, maybe two people in to a property like that. Just doesn't make sense. So I'm running into that same issue as I look at some of my larger multifamily. So one bedroom's out of the question, two bedrooms possibility, because now I can get three or four people in there. My three bedroom stuff, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of the larger organizations, they have really like big needs for like single families and single units. I don't know, have you run into that in your networking?
Yes, but not really finding that it would be beneficial to me.
Yeah, it's so tough, far. Which is why they have such massive waiting lists. But yeah, that's kind of what Andy has transitioned into. So he's liquidating a lot of his properties, fixing up hotels and apartment complexes, and just kind of taking those single families in. Like you said, it doesn't work if you just have like one property. It's not really worth the effort. But if you can fill up an apartment complex, you're basically, you know, you're getting the fair market rent. So it's not like the cash flow increases massively, but it's kind of a way to outsource your collections and marketing. So you don't have to have like a, you know, a bunch of leasing agents on hand. You're not going to need to, you know, file 20 evictions every single month because you're getting the guaranteed checks from these nonprofits. So something to explore. Bare minimum, it's something to kind of, this is something to mention with these organizations to kind of keep the relationship going and also get, you know, the referrals for your shared housing. So I was just kind of curious. So haven't really pulled the trigger on it yet, but it's something that you guys are thinking about.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, I'm interested to hear more about that. Well, man, a ton of little nuggets of knowledge in here for you guys. So this is probably one you're going to want to rewind, take some notes, follow up on, reach out to us if you have questions on this stuff. But we pretty much broke down the path from starting out with absolutely zero, finding a partner, delivering, and eventually, you know, just becoming a real estate investor. So it's something that you guys, if you're starting from ground zero, it's not like that's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, but chip away at it. And who knows, a couple of years, guys might have a large portfolio of your own. So Chad, thank you so much for coming on. Did you have any parting words or anything else that you wanted to cover for folks out here?
No, other than just to tell all the folks in the Facebook group, thank you. I asked a lot of questions and the Facebook group was critical to my success.
I love that.
Yeah. So I really appreciate that. And like I said, I'm always learning and I will continue in that mindset that I don't know everything and I'm just trying to do the best with what I have. So I am very appreciative of everyone's time that they give me in there.
That's awesome. Yeah. So for folks that are not really sure what we're talking about, we do have a gold course. Just kind of, we really should try to, it's a digital library with ton of documents, videos. We really do try to put as much information into that course as possible. And right now at the time of recording, with a gold course purchase, you get access to a private Facebook group of everybody else that has purchased the gold course. And honestly, at this point, you could probably just learn everything from the gold course within that group if you use the search function and start asking questions like Chad did. So that's awesome. It's glad to hear that you used that. Yeah. I would recommend, because you've kind of touched on it, you know, I always recommend investors that are kind of in your position, hey, put the word out there, start looking for operational managers within that group. I think that would be a good place to start looking for, you know, that key, kind of take yourself out of the business. So interesting.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear how that goes. Because once you do that, how many, I forgot to ask, how many properties do you have?
75, I think.
Massive, awesome portfolio. Yeah. How many of those are you doing the shared living model?
Currently?
Yeah.
Well, currently three. And then we're working on 4 and 5 right now. And then we're going to grow into, I've got some in other counties. So I need to move into those other counties that I'm saturate, you know, the county that I'm in too much, as well as Marion County, which is the main county that Indianapolis metro's in. So, yeah, we're going to do these two, and then we're going to move out two other counties that we own property in, and then into the metro area.
Yeah, so that you're in that point where it's still kind of part-time for you, but you start to feel it. You're starting to realize, like, if you need to scale or you want to scale, definitely that operational manager is going to be, like, a key position for you.
Yeah, and so for me, it's an income, right? When my gross income hits a certain level, hits a certain mark, that's when I've told myself I want to hire an operation manager.
Nice. Are you close to it, or what's the timeline that you think you'll hit that?
Probably 3 months. That's $25,000 a month.
Beautiful.
Where I want to be. Yeah.
All right. And folks,
I think I can, I'm sorry. I think I can handle it myself and with those partnerships that I had talked about until we reach that level. And then I'm ready. Then I got to bail.
Approximately how many properties would you need with the shared housing model to hit that?
I think I've got it three, you know, and of course they're not all the same, right?
Yeah.
Because there's varying levels of residence that you could put in them, but the next, I should get there within the next three houses.
Beautiful. So folks, that should give you kind of an example of the type of financial opportunity that this, that the business brings, which we didn't even really get into details on, but the ROI on these things, have you ever crunched the numbers to like figure out what the ROI is or your cash on cash return?
I don't really care. Yes. It sounds, that's terrible.
No, it's not. I love that. I don't know if you've ever heard Andy's method for analyzing deals.
Yeah, I think I have, but I don't remember what it is.
Look, it's if, like, if I have to
use a calculator or something like
that. It's not a deal. Look, if I got to even crunch numbers, it's not a deal. You won't even look at it, which is kind of like you go into bigger pockets and there's some people that have like this massive Excel sheet to like crunch numbers and figure out if it's a deal.
So
probably not a deal if you need to do that.
I don't want to drag this on too long, but I am a numbers guy.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And I shared earlier I had a 15-year career as a business analyst.
Wow.
And that's what I did, right? And that's what I had done up all the way through my real estate investing career. I know all my numbers on my rentals. But when it comes to this, I don't care because they blow everything that I had done out of the water and it just doesn't matter at this point, right? And because they're so much more profitable and they check so many boxes for me personally from a ministry perspective that it just doesn't matter now. And I love that because it was something that I concerned myself with a lot and that I invested a lot of time into. And I still do. I still have those big, stupid spreadsheets for all my properties, you know, or do capitalization and do my profit analysis on all those properties. Just to make sure that they remain profitable and that they, well, I've got a quad that I'm going to be selling soon because it's not meeting my goals, right? But with this model, it just doesn't matter.
Love to hear that.
Because it's so profitable and it's serving others and it helps. It's checking those boxes for me, right? For I'm giving back. I can provide ministry to these houses and these people. So.
Yeah, it's the ultimate like win, win, win. You win, community wins, the tenants win. It's going to be really cool. You know, Andy came up with the name Group Home Riches. The riches, yeah, obviously financially, like you said, it's kind of off the charts. But when you start to get like messages from former tenants that you're that stepping stone to a better life for a lot of these people, and that's what he refers to the real riches as. So if they haven't started yet, since you're pretty new, I'm sure you'll start to get those messages and letters and things like that. And that'll just be more fuel for the fire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Chad, it was awesome. We had a pretty short email exchange, but just by that, you know, when you said your experience and everything, I was like, man, this is going to be a monumental podcast. So, and it was. So thank you so much for coming on. Where can, if people want to reach out to you, you know, do you have social media or website or anything like that that you wanted to mention?
Yeah. So I don't really have a big online presence outside of Facebook and LinkedIn. So you can find me there, Chad Swinford, and find me in that Facebook group. Pretty active in there.
Beautiful. So folks, if you're on the fence or you're just finding this, head to grouphomeriches.com. Bare minimum, sign up for the free training material. We drop a ton of value in the email course that's free. It does sound like something that you're serious about. You want to get started, bare minimum, sign up for that gold course. Email our support with any questions that you have. Pop into the Facebook group and ask questions just like Chad did. And who knows, you may even, you know, when Chad actually has some free time and he's sitting on the couch, you know, he might pop in there and help you out on there. Well, man, it's great. I think congrats on the record-breaking start, you know, just getting started out for the most part. I mean, you look what you've done in basically just the first quarter. Can't wait to have you on for an update. Maybe when you hit that goal and you have your operational manager, you come on for a little update podcast so we can hear what you've done.
Yeah, let's do it again.
All right. Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We'll keep in touch and have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, guys. Bye.